Hi, I'm Gene Alcoholic. It's a great pleasure to be here tonight. There was a lot of celebration with this group, a lot of celebration with the other groups, and I told my sponsor that maybe it was a little bit exaggerated, and he told me, hey, it's not about you, it's to show that AA works. So what I got tonight is a small text, but it has only 2 pages. Okay. So, yes, tonight is a 1 year, so I thanks everybody for being here tonight, and special thanks to Nikki who made this possible. Thank you, Nikki. And so I will explain very quickly what it was like and what happened and how it is now. Well, 1 year ago, I was taking a white chip. I wasn't feeling well at all. I had no apartment, no bank account, no driving license, no car. No job, no clothes, no phone. I knew nobody in the United States, and the immigration said I had to leave the country by July 1st, 2013. All I had was Tom and Dane from AA and a bicycle. Together, we went to the apartments, the doctors, the job interviews, the bank, the immigration office, the DMV, the car dealerships, the shopping malls, and they allowed me to stay at their place for 4 months. I lost everything in China. I couldn't see a way out. I was exhausted by the mess I've made of my life, and I had a sincere desire of finishing it all, and almost embraced the idea. But God kicked in, and the miracle kicked in, and I will never forget all this love. And today I'm grateful. All I had was Tom and Dane from AA, and that was enough for a miracle. And Dane is here tonight. He's a great guy, and I hope you like him too. Thank you.
My name is Dane. I'm an alcoholic. Well, I guess I'm here to celebrate Gene's sobriety, and he asked me to speak last week, and my immediate thought is I don't want to, you know, just not my thing, I guess, but, you know, I said yes because, you know, just like Gene said, you know, I was taught it's about spreading the message, so can everybody hear me all right? Is that good? Okay. So, so I was thinking about what I was going to say tonight, and I was just thinking about, you know, in the sixth grade, I had a presentation due on the pharaohs, you know, for Egypt, and I did not do the report. So I got up there like, it's Dane's turn, come on up and do your presentation. I was like, I just got up there and I just stood there like this, and I just got real red, and I was like, you know, and they let me stand there for quite a while, you know, and I was just like, so I stood there and I think I probably hummed and hummed and did some of that, and then, you know, I went and sat down, and that was a bad experience. So I was thinking about, you know, like, what's the worst that could happen tonight, you know? And I don't think I've ever seen anybody ever, like, give a lead and then somebody come up and be like, you suck. That was so bad, you know? So I figure I'll give it my best shot, and hopefully nobody says that. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm really here to just talk about, like, the insanity in my life, and then what's happened to, you know, what kind of change has happened to me. And you know, I lived in Cleveland. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and a little suburb outside of there, and called Avon Lake, and I started drinking, probably in high school or something like that, and immediately from the beginning, I had that allergy to alcohol where it was just like, I wanted more. I could see that from the beginning, you know, so, you know, and that's really, that's one of the big parts of my my alcoholism is that I just didn't see it. You know what I mean? I just wanted to be normal. I wanted to just live my life. I wanted to be like everybody else that was, you know, in high school. They were drinking. They were, you know, smoking pot and doing what else. You know, but for me, it was like immediately. I was drinking, you know, 10 beers when they were drinking 6. You know, I just always wanted more. And, you know, I didn't want to go home ever. And I flocked to those people. So I started doing all that, and my life became really, really unmanageable, you know, just due to drinking and having that allergy to alcohol. I learned about what alcoholism was when I came in, you know, and through all the unmanageability in my life and me trying to, you know, run the show, I landed myself in some pretty bad situations. So when I got here, you know, it was like I had a desire to stop drinking, but I didn't know anything about myself or what alcoholism was or what, you know, anything like that. So it was just like, I just knew, like, oh, I need to do something about my life because it's bad, you know, it's really bad. And I guess I'd consider myself like a medium, you know, so I wasn't like a low bottom, I wasn't a high bottom, I was just kind of floating there in the middle and, you know, getting in trouble and getting arrested and, you know, harming my body and just all kinds of stuff. So, when I showed up, I showed up at this treatment center in Kentucky. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's called the Liberty Ranch, and you know, that's where I got sober at. You know, I guess what preceded that was due to the insanity of, you know, alcoholism, is that I couldn't see that I had to stop drinking to get better. You know, that's really what the disease of alcoholism that I was taught is, that it wasn't, you know, that I, you know, drank and drank and drank and drank and drank, is that when I stopped drinking or when I was still drinking, I always thought, okay, well, I can do this or I can do that and it will make my life better, you know. But it was really just about me separating from alcohol and realizing that, you know, I have no choice over whether or not I want to improve my life or if I want to even stop drinking today. Like, I cannot decide that for myself. And it talks about extensively in the book about, you know, just everybody's different, you know, all everybody's different experience with that. One of the big ones that I look back on, because I did a lot of drugs. I did a lot of drugs. And I did a lot of drinking, but, you know, I consider myself an alcoholic today. But when I showed up, I really didn't say, you know, I wouldn't tell anybody I was an alcoholic because, you know, I did a lot of drugs, you know. And but one of the things I look back on is, like, you know, I look back at how I drank, and I remember one time I went to a treatment center, and I'd gotten out. I was just there for like a detox. I can't remember how I ended up there or whatnot, but I was there for a detox, and, you know, I just, you know, I guess I had somewhat of a desire to stop drinking at that point, but. When I got out, what preceded that was I wasn't drinking. I was doing drugs. You know, I was drinking here and there. You know, if I couldn't get my hands on something, I would drink. But I wasn't continuously drinking. So my grand idea that time was, okay, I got out of treatment on Christmas Eve of 2009, and I remember going home. And I'd been sober for, you know, whatever, 7 days or something. And I remember going home and thinking, okay, well, now I can drink because it's Christmas and I'm not going to do drugs. So obviously that's going to have to work. So yeah, I went out and I drank, and that was probably one of the most miserable weeks of my life. I tried hanging on to that idea of, like, well, I'm just drinking. It's not so such a bad thing. But I would wake up with such anxiety. I couldn't sleep. I tried my hardest to make it work. You know, it was probably about a week that I was just trying, just drinking. And, I would wake up with such anxiety, and I would have to wake up and just pound bottles of wine just to, you know, kind of like get my nerves back down, or like chain smoke a cigarette like really, really fast. That'll take away that feeling of anxiety pretty good too. But so, you know, that's just one of those things though, is like I couldn't make that decision for myself, like, okay, I'm not going to drink anymore. You know, I couldn't do that. So I continued on in the insanity, and my life became even more unmanageable and more unmanageable. I started doing like intravenous drugs and just everything else, and my life became really, really bad. And it's really a miracle that I came out of it without like any significant problems. You know, I had court cases and whatnot, but overall my health was good, and I was my family, you know, was willing to like, you know, kind of work with me. So I ended up in this treatment center, and when I got there, I remember sitting on this curb, and I was sitting there talking to this guy, and I didn't think I would. I thought I'd be all right again. You know, I thought I could just, you know, do whatever I wanted, and I'd figure it out. You know, because that's how my whole life had kind of been. So, I was sitting on this curb, and I was talking to this guy, and I said, you know, is this feeling of anxiety in my head, that like restless, irritable, discontent feeling, is that ever gonna go away? And he's just like, yeah, man, you're suffering from, you know, like uncured alcoholism right now. You need to work the steps. You need to get a sponsor. And I listened. I'm like, yeah, right. You know what I mean? Wow. That makes no sense to me. Like, that doesn't, not, none at all. So, but I was court ordered to that treatment center. So during that time, I kind of started learning about like what alcoholism was, what I had to do. And one of the other big things was, because I had been around this program, I'd been court ordered to meetings probably since the age of like 15, that I knew that the solution had to do with God. You know, I knew that, you know, step one said I was powerless, my life was unmanageable, but step two said we came to believe. And like, that's the point where I was just like, enough of this. Because eventually in my alcoholism, I didn't hesitate to tell somebody, yeah, I have a drinking problem. I'm an alcoholic. You know, it was like obvious to everyone. I couldn't define what it was, but I knew that there was something up. So when I went to that treatment center, I had to realize that it was like it was God. And so I guess really what the story behind it was is that I had got a felony drug possession charge in Cleveland. It was like 2 a.m. I got arrested with some drugs or whatever, and got sentenced to rehab. So I had kind of manipulated my way into like this other treatment center that I'd been to a few different times already, you know, because I knew it was like a 30-day treatment center. I didn't have to really do anything while I was there. I could get back out and just do whatever I wanted. So it was either that or the state rehab. So I convinced them. I convinced them to send me to that treatment center. So they sent me there. About a week goes in, I'm sitting there just obsessing about getting loaded. You know, I just can't get it out of my head. So eventually I just went and did it. You know, I mean, I was just like, whatever, I'm just going to go and do it. And I don't know if anybody remembers this, but it was like a few years back. It was this guy called the Barefoot Bandit. He was in like Colorado or something. It's crazy. It's this kid. He was like 17 years old, and he was like robbing houses for like 2 years. And he like stole this airplane and flew it to the Bahamas and like crash landed it and like got in this boat chase. And that was like, he was like my hero, you know. Like I left treatment, and I was like, if he can do it, I can do it. Like I can do it. So I get back to my hometown, and I realize I have like no money, and I didn't have any faculties to do any of that stuff. I didn't know how to fly an airplane, so I pretty much just kind of like got loaded for another week, and then when the, you know, court came, I just went, you know. And so this is kind of where God stepped in, though. Was I went to court that day, and the judge said, okay, you're going to jail because you left the treatment center. And then the probation officer stood up and said, well, his mother has got him a bed at a treatment center tomorrow in Kentucky, you know, so he can go tomorrow to a treatment center. You know, we can skip the whole jail thing. So I went to that treatment center, and before I left the next day, though, I went home, and I was sitting in my room, and my girlfriend's dad at the time, he came in, and he started talking to me, and he's like, what are you going to do? You know, because I've been through this dance with him so many times. And he's like, what are you going to do? And I said, you know, I don't know, but all I know is that it has to do with God. And that was it. Like, that was that willingness that I talked about in step two, was like, I just had to be willing to believe. I didn't have to believe in anything or know what it was or any of that. I just had to be willing to believe. And I was, you know, I had screwed my life up enough to where it was like, okay, I think I can do that. I think I can start believing. So I showed up at that treatment center, and I didn't want to be there. And but what happened was, my whole life I always did whatever I wanted. You know, it was that selfishness. But when I showed up at that treatment center, I started realizing that, like, God was always blessing me. He was always putting stuff in my life that was good. And I was always the one that would deny it and go the other direction. So I started looking around at, like, where I was and who I was with and what was happening in my life. And I started accepting it. You know, I started accepting it. It's like, okay, God put me here. This could be God's will for me. And look, I'm safe. I'm healthy. Like, for the first time in my life, I started thinking like that. And, like, I'd never thought like that in my life. You know, I was always scheming something to get out and, you know, do the next, whatever else I wanted to do. So, you know, I started believing a little bit there. Like I said, I wasn't willing to do everything. I couldn't have bought into this whole program at that time, but I was slowly, like, the steps were working me. Like, that's kind of what I've came to believe. It's like, I can't make anybody work these steps, and you can't really make yourself work the steps either, unless it's like at that point, you know, like in my life, where it came to, like, it just happens, you know what I mean? And luckily, I was blessed with people around me that were showing me the way to do it. You know, they were showing me, you know, how to get a sponsor and, you know, how to start working steps and surrendering stuff. Surrender's been a big thing in my program. Is just learning how to give stuff up. You know what I mean? That selfishness is what was killing me, and I can see that now. But at the time, it was such a hard thing. And I think everybody, I don't know about everybody, but it seemed like this treatment center I was at, it was a guy's treatment center. So every guy came in there with a girlfriend that was loaded, you know, just so screwed up. And we were all like, man, this girl is great. You know, she's like, she's perfect for me. I'm never letting her go, you know. And it's like those kind of things. It's like how we can't see the truth. You know what I mean? We just want to do whatever we want. And so, you know, those were the kind of surrenders. It's like, okay, I had to give up people, places, things. That includes my girlfriend. That includes family members. That includes anybody that was like, you know, might be a bad influence on me. And I was willing to make those surrenders. So, you know, I made a lot of drastic changes in my life over, you know, those few months. And, you know, I've just benefited so much from that. But I think, you know, when I first got my first sponsor, it was such a weird thing. You know, it was like that was a big surrender in itself. Like, they told me, like, just go up and ask that guy over there to be your sponsor. I'm like, what the fuck? It's weird, you know, why would I do that? And, you know, but I had to do it. So I walked over to him. It was so bad, too, because I was detoxing, and I was at a Narcotics Anonymous picnic with the treatment center. And it was probably like 95 degrees. It was like middle August, and in Kentucky, in southern Kentucky. And I was detoxing. I was sitting there crying. Like, I was sitting there tearing up. And I didn't want to, like, let anybody know, but, like, you know, I was sitting there crying, like, just miserable. And then they came up to me and said, hey, why don't you go ask him to be your sponsor? I went and did it. I went and sat back down and kept crying. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's like those surrenders that I had to make. Just little one, little by little by little. And it's the things that I didn't want to give up the most that I had to give up. You know what I mean? I had to give that stuff up to make progress, at least in my sobriety. And it made so much sense. You know, they said, like, if you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to get what you get. So, you know, I had to change everything about myself. And today, the person that's talking now is, like, nowhere even close to the person that I was, you know, back then. So I've had a lot of great experiences in sobriety, and, you know, I stayed in that treatment center. I didn't want to, so I stayed for about 3 months. I was court ordered for about 3 months, and my mom sent me some winter gloves, so I was like, I don't really have anywhere else to go. I figured I might be staying the winter. So I said, okay, I'll stay a couple more months. And in those next couple months, I decided, like, wow, I really need to do something drastic about my life. And I saw people at that place just, like, committing, like, fully committing to this way of life and, like, actually, like, saying, I'm going to follow through with it. So I'm going to stay here for as long as it takes. So eventually did that. So I ended up staying there for about a year. And it was a really good program. Go to meetings every day and, work the steps. And but it wasn't until I got out that I really had to start working the program for myself. I was on the four-step when I got out. So I was about 11 months in. I was still sitting on a fifth step. So right when I got out, I went and dropped the fifth step. And I started working six and seven. And I wrote my amends list and started making amends to people. And, it's just been such a... so crazy just looking back at it all, because none of the stuff that's happened has been of, like, my choice. I've never, I would have never said anything like that. So, just following what God's put in my life and looking around and really accepting whatever it is, has really been my guiding factor. And I really like, the literature, and I didn't really get into the literature until, I don't know, I was probably about a year and a half sober, and I listened to a speaker, just talk about how detailed the literature is about how this program is written and how we can work it on a daily basis. And for most of the part, I had been doing it, so a lot of the underlining, attributes or whatever were already there. So, I was already working the program in my life, but there was, like, this next level that I could take it to. I could start helping people. I could start reaching out to other alcoholics and really trying to spread the message. And it's really precise. Going through the book with a sponsee has been, very rewarding. I had a really cool experience with it. I had, I got through the steps, right after, I kind of got out of treatment, and so I was like, all right, I'm ready to sponsor people. And so I started sponsoring this guy. I didn't really care about the guy. I just was like, oh, I'm a sponsor now, And so he would call me and we'd talk or whatever. I'd be like, yeah, man, read the doctor's opinion and, write me a little paragraph. And so, like, and he would do it, he would do it. And, like, we would just slowly kind of go through the steps. And he drank, what I mean? He drank like 3 months in, and that's what he always did. Like, he was always in and out of the program for the last 10 years. He was just in and out, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months. And so then, I kind of heard that speaker tape, and I realized, wow, this program is pretty detailed. The literature is very in-depth about how we're supposed to work this program and how it's about getting out of ourselves. So I went through the book, and then I went through the book again with him. And he stayed sober for a whole year. It was the longest he'd ever been sober in his entire life. He relapsed, but he stayed sober for a year. And he made a lot of progress. So it was, like, really cool seeing that. Like, the difference between, like, just making something up and then doing the program of AA. It's like the program of AA works. It's just about really getting to what it is. So... I don't know, I feel really blessed to have been asked to speak. Gene was a really big blessing in my life when I moved down to Florida. It was really cool. Like, my roommate, I moved here with him, and he had kind of picked up this guy that we had met at meetings that was kind of struggling. And he's like, man, we need to let this guy stay at our house. And I was like, no way. I'm not letting anybody stay at my house, especially that guy. And and so... he's like, man, you're so selfish. And I was like, damn it. So I let the dude crash on my couch, and, like, I ended up sponsoring the guy. And, but those were the things. It's like God always places people in my life to keep me going, to allow me to focus on somebody else other than myself. So I got a chance to work with that guy. Well, he ended up going to jail, because that's what happens, I guess. And then it was like I was at a meeting, and then, Gene shows up at this meeting, and I just, I just gave my number to him, like I was kind of taught, and he calls me the next day, and, started hanging out with him. And it was a funny story, actually, because I actually met him at a noon meeting on accident. And he's French Canadian. I don't know any other French Canadians. It's kind of weird, but he's a really good guy. No offense, Gene. Great guy. You're a great guy. But so I wasn't like, oh man, I'm about trying to help him. So he's like, are we hanging out? And I was like, well, you know, I kind of have some other stuff going on, so I go outside and I was talking to my buddy and then he comes back over and he's like, so what are you doing? Can you give me a ride? And I was like, sure, man. So I give him a ride, and like for the next, you know, the whole summer, it was just like, you know, I could always rely on like Gene being there if I needed him, you know, just call him, see how he's doing, help him out, give him rides to meetings. And it was just so funny how like one guy disappears and then the next one shows up for me to help, you know, to be there for. And then the funny thing, Gene gets a job. He moves to Tampa. I live over in Clearwater now, but he gets a job and moves to Tampa. And then that other guy gets back out of jail, and now I gotta start helping that dude again. So I don't know. That's just kind of how it's been for me. But I think I'm out of time. So thanks for letting me share, guys.